And we had the privilege of spending some time together in the discussion of the area of testing in our lives. And I would like to continue with that this evening. Just briefly, I'm so grateful for the many of you who were in prayer, indeed all around this nation. We were covered in prayer this afternoon. And in a situation where things could have gone very wrong. Those of you who have any idea of the ins and outs of what was happening this afternoon, God laid his hand upon that in an amazing way, and I felt very free to give the gospel and to minister to the needs of those who were here. So thank you for your prayers. It is amazing what happens when we pray for our family. I felt like I passed some tests this afternoon. I'd like us to continue on, basically, where we left off this morning. We're just, I feel too strong here, Carl. I don't know. Okay. Thanks. And just quickly in review, let's begin to remember where we were with respect to this area called testing. And let's remind ourselves by way of just a little view, four quick review points. If you'd care to take these down, that's fine. If not, just feel free to just kind of let them flow through your mind and possibly bring back some of the information from this morning. Number one, the thing that we need to keep in consideration from our study this morning is that the purpose of testing, the purpose of all testing, is simply onefold. There's only one reason why God allows testing to come into our life, and that purpose is to intensify our walk with Him. We must never lose sight of that. God brings testing into our life for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to intensify our walk with Him. God is not interested in us being failures. God is interested in us coming to know Him so well that we will find that we can meet all of our needs through Him. So that's point one. Point two, unpopular though it may be, and not preached well, I believe in general, testing is not optional for growing believers. Testing is never an optional process. For those of out there who tell you that the moment you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, you're going to go through a happy-go-lucky existence. You're going to be blessed in amazing ways with all sorts of prosperity and limousines and this and that and wonderful rich singing voices. They're liars. That's all there is to it. Testing is not optional for the growing believer. God has specific testing in mind for His loved children. Number three, it is testing which builds endurance in the believer. As much as I enjoy blessing, as much as I enjoy the many aspects of God's creation that He has given to us to enjoy, to love, to the beauty of the creation, the magnificence of a sunset, all those things bring me closer to the Father, but they do not give me endurance. And so the testing builds endurance in the believer. And number four, always in testing, and this is where we're moving tonight, in testing we will always be tempted to find our own solutions. In testing we will always be tempted to find our own solutions. Excuse me, God, but I believe that my way around this is a little faster and a little easier. And we will find that this always results in failure and, for lack of a better word, stunted growth. Stunted growth. We would no more allow our children to short-circuit or to find their own solutions around testing than anything. When we send home flashcards, as we are so apt to do in the younger ages for our children here at the school, parents would no more say, well, I'll tell you, I'll make an easy way around this here. I'll just put the answer at the bottom right-hand side of the page. And as you go through the flashcard, you'll just find the answer right there, Junior. That's a good solution as far as Junior is concerned. It's not a very good solution as far as we're concerned. They have to learn endurance, do they not? And as we go through our physical life, we find much the same thing, that we must find endurance through God's solutions. So I've meditated on this issue of testing. I've come to believe that there's a major reason why we don't do well in testing. And I believe the purpose or the reason behind that is because we do not know our God well. If we had even the foggiest notion of how great our God was and how able He is, the testing that we go through in life would be much simpler. And I find that as I go through my life, when I spend time in meditation and devotion and preparation to understand and take specific time to come to a better understanding of the greatness of Father, that it affects very much how I walk in my life. I embarked on a study last year called Living in God's Presence, in which I sought to begin to understand more than just the 10 principles that we look at in terms of who is God, for me to come to a better understanding of how well God knows me. And let me tell you that the more I understand my Father, the more I come to an understanding of His greatness, the easier it is for me to endure in this life. And I don't believe there is any substitute in the world for knowing Father well. In life's illustration, if we look at a marriage, there is no substitute for knowing your wife or husband well. We've talked about this before, but the point is very simple. The better you come to know that person, the more you come to understand what you can expect from that person. Unfortunately, the illustration falls a bit in marriage, does it not? But it doesn't with our Father. The more we come to know Him, the more we find that He is able. And so tonight, just very briefly, I'd like us to start in two specific passages that help us to understand who Father is, and then we will move back into the testing issue, and hopefully we will move out of here with an understanding that God knows me so well that He knows my exact needs, and He knows that there will come nothing into my life wherein He has not provided a way out. Psalm 139, if you would please, this evening in your scriptures. Psalm 139. Maybe this is a familiar passage to you. I hope it is. I spent literally the whole summer meditating on this passage. It is an awesome, awesome piece of work. It's a Psalm of David. It's a look at who God is and how well He knows you. And I've embarked upon for myself just a listing of all the ways that Father knows me just through this passage. What a beautiful thing when you start to look at those sort of things. And in the camps where I have the privilege to teach in the evening, this was a portion of each night's study as we memorized this passage together as a class. And I'd like you just to look at it briefly. We're not going to spend a great deal of time in exegesis of this passage, although I would love to. But what we need to understand just through this is how well your Father knows you. If I would ask you right now, before looking at this passage, to take and from your mind to be able to write down on a piece of paper, to write down all the things that Father knows about you, how long would your list be? You hear what I'm saying? Would it be just this two or three, God loves me, okay? God protects me. I remember that from Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. Okay? Is that all the longer it would be? See, God wants us to just know just how well He knows us. Isn't it something when you know that someone knows you so well and yet does not judge you? That's called friendship. Okay? That's called marriage. At least in my marriage. I don't know about yours. Okay? But the thing that freaks me out is after 20 years on Tuesday, it was 20 years for Pammy and I, after 20 years, she knows me so well and still has not changed the locks on the door. That's something, isn't it? Okay, I went home today and she was still there. Even though she knew. Well, your Father is the same way, only better, because your Father's committed always and only towards making you more of the child that He wants you to be. Let's look just briefly at this beautiful psalm. I'll read just with some brief comment, but what are we trying to get done here in the next few moments? We're just starting to get in our frame of reference an idea of how well Father knows us. Please don't miss that. It says, O Lord, Thou hast searched me, and literally in the Hebrew it says, You have rendered me inside out. Isn't that gorgeous? Okay? You have searched me, and You have known me. Now, for most of us, if God were not a loving, kind, compassionate, merciful, tender God, that's where this psalm would end. Correct? But Lord, you have searched me and know me. And then he goes into detail and tells us all the things that God knows about him. Check it out really quickly. You know when I sit down. You know when I rise up. And you understand my thoughts from afar. This has two frame of references. From God, from far in his universe, and from us in terms of our thoughts far into the future. He knows what we think before we think it. Wouldn't that be a great gift, teachers, parents? Wouldn't that be awesome? If you knew what the child was going to think before they could think it, actually, we'd only last about a week, wouldn't we? Truth of the matter being. But thou understandest my thoughts from afar. Now look at this next one. You scrutinize my path. Scrutinize, again, is another very beautiful word. It means you very carefully scope out where I'm headed. Before you go on a trip, what's the first thing you do? I hope you get a map, right? And you don't just say, somehow we'll get to Newark. I don't know how this is going to happen, but somehow we'll get there. We'll follow the road signs. Well, sad to say, there usually aren't any road signs that have Newark on it until you get about 100 miles away. And so what do we do before we make the trip? Us men, we're good at this one. We get out the old yellow highlighter, okay, and we start in. All right, and we check out the mileposts, and we figure out exactly how far we're going to go each day and where we will stop. All right, we go through that whole process, and we kind of figure out how much gasoline we're going to take to make the trip. Us tightwads, we're just making sure we have enough money for the trip. We scrutinize the path. Someday, I have promised my wife, and this will be an exercise, and you will know I'm mature when. When this happens, I have promised her that we will go to the eastern United States in the fall and we will throw the map away. That will be fun. That will be the hardest thing in the world for me. Okay? Just kind of, what's up ahead? I don't know. But in this case, I'd hate to have a God who is that way, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you hate to have a God who didn't already scrutinize your path, and besides that, he scrutinized our lying down? He says, I know what path you're going to trod today. I know what you're going to go through. And I know where you're going to lie down. I have control of all that. Are you getting a picture of how well God knows us? This is just the beginning. You scrutinize my path, my lying down, and you are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Intimate. What a beautiful word that is. I am intimate with my wife. I am intimate with a few dear friends. Intimate says that you are right next to. That's how our God knows us. God is not some cosmic coward who sits on a cloud and throws stuff at us. See, people view God that way. Or God is not some cosmic king who just pops stuff into your path and then laughs. No, God is intimately acquainted with all your ways. Verse 4, even before there is a word on my tongue, Lord, you know it all. You can say that God is a know-it-all. Okay? Before there's a word, God knows it. And then my favorite part of this passage is it says, you have enclosed me behind and before, and you have laid your hand upon me. And I want you to think about that. If you wanted protection, would you have security? How would you have it set up? You first of all would have someone in front of you, and you would have someone in back of you. And then wouldn't it be wonderful if you had someone right next to you with their hand right on top of you? Wouldn't that be great? This is your God. Please don't forget this. This is your God. Your God knows you so well, so intimately. He has every thought, everything taken care of in your life that there's absolutely nothing that can come into your life that he does not have a solution for. See, if we would come to know God in this way, it would change very much how we view life. And then the psalmist just stops for a moment and he says, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too high. I cannot even begin to understand that. And with the psalmist, I agree. I don't understand it. But I'm awfully grateful for it. Then he moves into a passage here as he looks at all the directions that he thought, well, let's do a mental study. Let's see if I can hide from God. see if there's any place at all I can hide from God. He says, where can I go for a work from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I go all the way to the heaven, oh well, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths of the earth, literally, you're there. If I go all the way to the east, all the way to the wings of the dawn, you're there. If I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, find my own island, you're there too. Even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold of me. And if I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night, even in the darkness, there's no dark to you. And the night is as bright as day. Darkness and night are alike. Darkness and light are alike to you. Then he goes into a passage and he talks about our creation. That's a beautiful thing to see. It says, you did form me inside in my inward parts, my guts, literally. You wove me carefully in my mother's womb. While we were in our mother's womb, he was looking and seeing what our needs were, what we were going to go through in life. I will give thanks to you because I'm fearfully, irreverently, and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it well. My frame, my skeletal, how I was going to look, how tall, how short, the club foot, the hand that doesn't quite work, the eyes that aren't what they should be. When I was made in secret, you knew all that. And I was skillfully wrought, and your eyes saw my unformed substance. And in your book were written all the days that I would live when I hadn't even had one. Now, I'm hoping that you're starting to get the idea here of this is a pretty mighty God. And as we start to get the idea of how great God is, then we have got the frame of reference to move through testing. We'll finish up 17 and 18 and then we'll move on. How precious also are thy thoughts to me. How vast is the sum of them. If I could count them, they would outnumber the sand. And even when I awake, I am still with thee. May I challenge you to just spend some time meditating on this psalm. It will change your life. There's not much out there that is changing, that will change your life. This will change your life. It's not because of the words. It has nothing to do with anything other than as we begin to get a grasp of the greatness of Father, amazing things happen in our life. And when you come to the test, and remember, I did not say if, I said when, and I'm starting to find out that this testing is not just always these great and great things that happen like did this week. This week was a great test, a big test. But it seems like as we go through our life, the little stuff we kind of decide that we can handle on our own, and I'm finding that each day as I stride through my life in Jesus Christ, I have got to understand that that's a test, and that's a test, and that's a test, and that's a test, and that's all there to bring God glory and for me to come to know Him better. And you must begin to view each day in that way. And if you start to view each day that way, that each day is a test to bring me closer to God, suddenly tests don't become so scary. I have one professor that Mr. Brightwell is going to lose the rest of his hair over at seminary, who gives one test a semester. I have another professor at seminary who gives two tests a week. Now, when you back up and you look at it from the frame of reference sake, you say, as a student, I hate the fact that there's two tests a week. But as I get to the end of the semester and I'm finding that these two tests a week are no big deal, it's just a matter of building my concentration level and studying appropriately to take this quick 20-minute test, it's a lot easier than I'm saying I'm responsible for 4 months' worth of information on one test that's going to decide 40% of my grade. I'm in big trouble. See, that's why God just day by day by day brings these little tiny tests into your life. And the purpose for all that is to bring you close to Him every single day. Now, with a frame of reference of how great God is and how well He knows us, let's move on to 1 Corinthians 10:13, if we could, very quickly. And let's look at the specific promise. So we find how great is our God, and now secondly, we found how great is His promise. 1 Corinthians 10:13, common passage, everyone knows this. It begins with no temptation. The word there is the same word for testing. It's the same word that James uses in James 1:2. Let's look at it carefully and let's see what the promise is. The promise says, no temptation, or no, literally no testing, has overtaken you or come into your path, but that which is common to man. And now listen to this, because this is the promise. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation, he will always provide, continuing active, the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it. I know a lot of us have this passage in our intellectual frame of reference, but do we have this in our active frame of reference? Nothing that comes into our life is so earth-shattering that God can't say, I have provided the way of escape. Now, the next 5 minutes are the important part. So you can go to sleep after that. If you're a little bored, that's okay. But for the next 5 minutes, would you listen really carefully? Because this is where we're trying to head for the evening. I want you to understand something here about this passage, because there is a progression that follows. If you just draw a line on your notebook page, if you'd like to, and you will see what I'm talking about. Into each life, at the beginning of the line, you will see a thing called testing. And as the test comes into your life, the next thing that comes is something called temptation. Now, what's the temptation? I have test over here. Test 101 hits me. Boom. Very good friend of mine dies. Now, at that test, I have immediately in my mind all these thoughts that go through. They are called temptations. The temptation is for me to say, how dare he? The temptation is for me to say, I gave so much to that man, how could he do that? The next temptation is to say, I am not going to deal with this. Those are all temptations. Now, that's a big one, like I said, but there's all sorts of little ones too. Little ones with people who affect you in different ways, and you are tempted to just blow it off. You're tempted to come with your own solutions, a bitter tongue, a vitriolic word, a turning your back on. With each testing, there is temptation. And from temptation, we have a fork in the road. We go from testing to the temptation stands right in front of us. Well, if I were you, I'd do this. Or how dare they, da 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 da. At that point in time, we look at two areas. We can go the area of reliance, or we can go the area of sin. Every time you walk into testing, the end result is A, reliance, or B, sin. Please listen well to that. There is no option. When you are tested in this life in Jesus Christ, you stand at a crossroads that is so important. And each day is so important as you look and you say, today I will choose the way of reliance, or I will choose the way of sin. You say, I don't see it that clearly. You must. There is no option. There is no in-between. Well, I'll kind of take God's way and I'll kind of take my way. We're going to find soon that in James that's called the double-minded man, literally the dipsychos man, the psychotic man. More people walk into my office who are in need of help, who suffer from this than from anything else. We have more people with psychotic or psychosis conditions who are Christians today, because every day, instead of working into reliance, sometimes they do and sometimes they go this way. And we're going to find in James that God says, hey, double-minded man, don't think that you're going to get anything from me. A double-minded man is unstable and wavering in all his ways. James chapter 1, and we will bring this to a conclusion. This morning we left off with verse 4, let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And I'd like you to look at the wordplay for just a moment in verse 4. Remember what he told us in the verse 3 verses, in the first verse 2 and 3, consider it joy, brothers, when you encounter troubles, knowing that the reason for this testing of your faith produces endurance. And endurance is what it's all about, loved ones. And now we move to verse 4, and it says, let endurance have its perfect, teleos is the word here, completed result. Let endurance have its completed result. In other words, God says, here's the test in front of you, and here's what I want. I want you to walk through this thing until it is complete. I want you to walk through the test until you come to the end of it. Like we were talking this morning with the running, I can't run a half mile and ask for a cab to pick me up. God says, once you start the course, I want you to walk it until it is complete. Loved ones, it's only at the completion of the testing that we will truly understand it. But what's the problem in our life? Most people never get to the conclusion. Because somewhere along the path, and here's the problem, the temptation keeps hitting you all the way along. Oh, the temptation this morning was horrible in my life. I woke up with a horrible attitude. And as I went through the morning, all sorts of things happened. I came down here to get my mental attitude straight. And 3 minutes into my being here, Gary, my good brother Gary, shows up and he starts vacuuming the carpet in the next room. You say, that was a test? Yeah, it was. It was a test of whether I was going to go in there and wring his neck or understand that he was doing a job that needed to be done and could only be done at that time. And to focus not on the sin of going in and hurting him, but focus on the reliance that said, God knew that was going to happen. That's not an issue. You can still study and you can still put your frame of reference together in the midst of this. See how little a test that was? But if I hadn't gone through that test appropriately, then I wouldn't have been able to go on through the rest of the trial. See how easily it short-circuited? We can move through the whole thing so well and just short-circuit it at the end, and then the test is not complete. So the whole idea here then is that let the test be complete, then it goes on that you might be complete. Do you see the word play? Let the test complete its cycle, and at the end of the cycle, you will be complete. In another year, I will have completed 94 hours at seminary. Untold hours of reading, memorizing, testing, for this little 8x10 thing with little curlicues and a little gold thing at the bottom. And all that will say is, Bob Childress, you have endured from here to the end of the test, and now you have completed your course of study. I could short-circuit that at 92, couldn't I? I'm not taking that last class. I know better than that prof over there. I'll just kind of do it my own way and they'll let me walk the aisle at graduation day. For me to be perfect, for me to be complete, for me to complete the course, I must go all the way through it and then I will have reached completion. Now verse 5. But if... First class condition, if, and boy is it true, if any of you lacks wisdom, I've heard this one quoted out of context so many times, it just drives me crazy. If any of you lacks wisdom with regards to what? Testing, thank you. If any of you lacks wisdom with respect to testing, here's the answer, and here's where we're headed. If any of you lacks wisdom with respect to wisdom, let him ask of God. And boy, let me tell you, over this last week, there has been some serious asking going on. Ask and ask and ask and ask, to the point where I've asked other people to ask. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Because I know that when I ask, here's what the answer is. God will give to you how? Look at it. Generously and without reproach. What does generously and without reproach mean? Generously means that he gives and 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 without reproach that means that he never says, not again. What are you doing here again? I gave you that answer last time, bozo. He gives generously and patiently without reproach. He's willing that as you go through that testing that he knows you're going to go through because he scrutinized your path and he knows all of your ways carefully. He's willingly, he says, please, just ask. Just ask. I will provide the way of escape. I've promised. Remember the 1 Corinthians, Bob? Remember that? Just ask. And when I do that, he gives generously and without reproach. Now, verse 6 is the warning. Verse 5 is the answer, but verse 6 is the warning. But let him ask in faith, without any doubting. Literally, the word is debating. Here's one thing I do know. Faith and doubting do not belong on the same street. You can't have faith if you doubt. And you can't doubt if you have faith. Faith and doubting never go together. And here's what I find with some dear friends is that when their faith was overshadowed by their doubt, time after time after time after time, they debated back and forth with God. Oh, how can he do that? He says he will, but I know he can't. I'll do it my way. I know back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Loved ones, it'll drive you insane. It'll drive you to do things that will lead to your death. I know. I've just walked through it. So let him ask in faith without any doubting. For here's what the one who doubts is like. He's like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. I love to watch it, don't you? I love to stand on the cliffs at La Jolla Beach in California at the high tide with a full moon. There's nothing better. I love to sit there and watch, and these big, huge waves come in 12, 15 feet high, and they crash against those cliffs, and the spray goes up 30, 40 feet in the air. And in a hotel room staying across the street, you can feel it. It's like a freight train. And as the waves go up and crest and they curl and it hits those rocks and the froth and the spray goes up into the wind just kind of blows it. And it blows it in your face, and doesn't it smell wonderful? The sea breeze. I love to watch it, but I'd hate to be it. Could you imagine what it would be like to be that curl that came in about 30 miles an hour with about 40 million tons of weight behind it, go crash into that cliff, blow into the air, and then the wind just blows it away. I can't think of anything sadder for a human life. And yet that's what some of you are doing to your lives. Because you very simply will not believe in faith that God is able to take you through each and everything that comes into your life, your doubters. And when you doubt, you're just like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind, and you have no value. And it ends up in verse 7, let not that man who doubts, that man who is driven by the sea, that man who literally debates God. How arrogant. that we actually debate God when we read of how wonderful He is and we see how He leads our life. Let not that man expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, because he is a double-minded, dipsychos, psychotic person. Does one thing for a minute, then another for a minute. Does one thing for a minute, then another. Trust God just for a moment, then goes on his own path. Trust God for another moment, then goes on his own path. And each time we do that, we build more and more scar tissue. We move more and more into sin. And we learn less and less to rely. And we move farther and farther away from God and His will for our lives. I don't want to see that happen to any more of my family. I don't want to have to go through another week like this week. I don't want to have to speak at your funeral or memorial service, knowing that you chose the way of sin instead of the way of reliance. Because even though it's testing, and even though it brings me closer to God, it hurts. And it hurts the people around you. And it hurts the people that love you. Don't be double-minded. Live in faith. Rely on your Father. And He promises something else. He'll give you the desires of your heart. I really don't like it when object lessons get this close. But truth is truth. The life that counts, will you? Let's pray. Father, I am very grateful for the provision of this past week. You have been very close. You have taught me much. May this occurrence be a wake-up call for those of us who are indeed two-souled, who debate you, who move around your plans. May we come to really rely on you more fully. May we come to see you for the loving Father that you are, who wishes only for our best. And I'm really grateful that even in the midst of all the ways that we mess up, that you still love us, that we are eternally yours. and that even now my friend is wrapped in your arms. Dismiss us now with thy blessing in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, who loves us so. Amen.